Okay, I think we'll make a start. Welcome everyone. You're in concurrent session three and on the subject of health financial condition reports, the first 5 years. The presentation today is going to be a result of a survey which has been conducted through appointed actuaries and insurers, and the insurers, like, essentially it's been the CFOs have been responded to the survey. Also, I'd like to acknowledge in the room there is our regulator, the health insurance regulator, FIAC, present, and there's the government actuary present as well, so they may have some comments about the financial condition reports of the last 5 years. Presenting to us is Adam Jupp and Ray Wynne Davies. They both come from PwC. Adam is from Perth. Adam spends most of his time on health, and his spare time he spends it on general insurance. Ray Wynne works in health, general insurance, and accident compensation. She's been involved with many insurers and schemes in both the advisory or reviewing role. Ray Wynne has written and reviewed many statutory reports in a variety of contexts, and this has led her to involvement in this paper on the financial condition reports for health insurers. So this is their presentation. It'll probably go for about 40 minutes, but I think they will take questions if you come forward and come up to the microphone. Thank you.
I just wanted to kick off with a few introductory comments before we get into the survey results. So we've had these financial condition reports around for a few years now. In general insurance, there's been a few surveys and opinion pieces that have come out. So Adam and I thought it was timely to do something similar in health insurance. I've got a couple of slides just going through the background to financial condition reports and to this survey before we get into the survey results themselves. Then we've got a few concluding comments, and it's at that point that I guess there'll be quite a few comments as well from the floor. So the FCR has been a requirement since 2005. Each insurer, as you know, is required to have their appointed actuary, and one of the roles of the actuary is to prepare the annual financial condition report. It has to be done as at the 30th of June and then given to a copy made available to FIAC by the 30th of September. It's prepared in accordance with the Institute of Actuaries guidance note, which is well on the way to becoming a professional standard. It's a document for the board with a copy going to FIAC, but it's also used by management and is of use to the auditors. And these are the main areas that are dealt with by the financial condition report. It's all the as seen by the actuary and reporting on these main areas. Our objectives were get the opinions of the insurers as to how they viewed the process and the content, with an aim to promoting a bit of discussion, how can we improve it going forward, which bits are working for the insurers, where do they see improvement being needed. Okay, so now on to the survey itself. These were the number of participants in the survey. Thank you to everybody who felt able to respond. A few of the AAs felt for confidentiality reasons that they weren't able to participate. We asked AAs to respond referring to both a large insurer and a smaller insurer. So although we had 9 AA responses, that in fact covers 15 insurers. And then we got quite a good response rate from the insurers themselves. As Tori said, although it is a report to the board, we felt that the CFO probably has more to do with the the whole process is around the FCR. So the survey went to the CFOs. So who are the appointed actuaries? A very experienced lot. The largest insurers have internal actuaries, but for most insurers, the AA is somebody who is external. And you can see there's quite a number of other practice areas that the external AAs are involved with. So in that way, I think there's quite a cross-fertilisation of ideas that can happen across the practice areas. There's also a small number of insurers who have got internal actuarial resources but are also making use of external AAs. So, what do insurers think of their AAs? I'm not sure who's who in that picture of the dogs. Perceived knowledge. Really strong result here. You can see that insurers regard their AAs as having almost universally very strong knowledge of the industry and generally very strong knowledge of the company. Interestingly, a similar question was asked of AAs, how do AAs regard the knowledge of management? And again, the rating was generally strong or very strong, but there were a small number of responses from insurers saying that a small number of responses from AAs saying that insurer knowledge was a little bit less in the adequate category, which probably ties in with some of the comments that AAs were making as well, that in some cases their role is a little bit providing some education to the board or to management. Who do we talk to in preparing the FCR? And this question covered, it was intended to cover, not just communication at the time of the FCR, but communication across the whole period, the whole year when the AA will be involved with the insurer. And you can see that there's a lot of communication with the CEO, CFOs, and very high communication with the product and claims management areas, a little bit less so with policy services and investments. And this slightly lower communication that happens in the investment area is consistent with a few other responses throughout the survey, having a look at the way AAs report on the investment area in the FCR itself. I guess the other interesting observation is that insurers seem to be seeing that actuaries have a higher level of communication than AAs are rating themselves. So I'm not quite sure what the conclusion is from that. Are insurers seeing that they're more available for communication than they really are? Presenting the FCR, who do the... it's in all but one response indicated that the AA will present to the board. There's not necessarily a formal presentation that happens with management, but in most cases the AA indicated that the AA will certainly be in discussions with management throughout, discussing the recommendations and the findings. Frequency of communication. Certainly over 50% are in at least monthly communication with the insurers. And again, if you're comparing the way the insurers responded with the way the AAs responded, the AAs are rating themselves with more frequent communication than the insurers were seeing it as happening. part of that is probably because that the CFO just would not be aware of all of the additional communication that, that goes on during the period. How do we communicate? Well, this is the view in the world of ID. How do insurers see us as communicating? Well, this is good as verbal communicators. We're rated good or very good. Slightly lower rating as far as our written communication skills. Looking in a little bit more detail at the written communication. Generally, as far as the report length goes for the executive summary and the main report, the length is about right. A couple saying that the report is a little bit too long. And the content, again, most insurers seem to be quite happy with the report content. A couple saying that the report might be a little bit too general. And just one there reporting that the report was a little bit too technical.
Thanks, Raywin. Now we get into a bit more detail about what's actually in the SER in terms of content. And this slide is sort of meant to suggest, does the SER alert the board to the risks that they're actually facing, or do we just allow them to sit on their hands a bit and relax? So in terms of the report content, we sort of asked insurers and also AAs about the report content, and the insurers responded that on the average, the areas where the FCR covered was covered well, got a response of good or very good, over 80% of the time was solvency and profitability, performance, contribution and capital adequacy, which is probably not much of a surprise thing, it is our bread and butter. Less than 80%, though above 60% of the areas which got good or very good were the investments or the business plan. Now, the sort of opinion that we have is why this is slightly lower is that the business plan is mainly done by internal services, so where the appointed actuary is external, there may be difficulty in them, you know, being in the actual thinking through or the strategy that's involved in that. And where the investments are involved, typically a health insurer will have a separate advisor for their investments as opposed to the AA doing it for them. And so that might be why there might be the AA might be seen to have a less grasp or cover the area, not as well. All right. So just some comments from the insurers about the report content. Typically, we found that a higher score on written communication is linked with higher scores on coverage. Suggested improvements for the AAs was that their report should be less technical in nature, pitch more at the board, and reduce the potential duplication of internal work already performed. This is where management has already maybe reported or something to the board, and they find that the FCR duplicates that. It should be noted, though, that this is also the response from the CFO rather than the board itself. Some insurers reported that there should be a more detailed experience analysis or the explanation of results. This goes to, rather than just stating why it was, what the results were, the core reasons for what driving that experience over the year. And the actuary, appointed actuary, should make use of work done by other advisors, i.e. investments from the previous slide. All right. So going on to the report recommendations. 88% of insurers responded and said that the FCR included some recommendations. Of those that responded, and they could have had multiple responses, 44% regard some of those recommendations as important to their business, 75% said that some of those recommendations were of a purely technical nature, and 25% did not agree with at least one of the recommendations put forth in FCR. From the General Insurance Survey on Financial Condition Reports done in 2008, approximately 40% of appointed actuaries surveyed reported that only some recommendations were acted on. So, unfortunately, we didn't ask that question this time around, so we can't provide a health insurance perspective. Other risks? Oh, click through. Missed that one. All right, we'll skip that. So reports and recommendations, part two. Areas where the insurers perceived the FCR recommendations had great value was capital management. Whether this is development of a capital management plan or the capital target, which they used, therefore, when setting premium rates in future. Also, it helped their understanding of capital requirements and capital capital targets outside the standard regulatory requirements or capital setting approaches. Other recommendations which the insurers that they had taken up was equalisation of gross margins between hospital and general treatment products. Projections by the appointed actuary in the FCR were used to either benchmark or were adopted by the insurer going forward. And they say generally we got responses saying that value is given by the appointed actuary throughout the year, not just at the FCR time. Despite all of this and the positive feedback from the insurers, we still note that there are some instances where obviously something has gone wrong and there's still been matters escalated to FIAC. All right. So notifiable circumstances. Are we being told in advance or in a timely manner before we hit the iceberg? So we asked insurers about when they provide advice to the appointed actuary on a range of issues. Their possible responses were during proposal stage, during planning stage, after the implementation, during the FCR process, or just not applicable as in it hasn't occurred. Investments and business plans were typically advised to the appointed actuary later, though the majority was still advised to them in the proposal and planning stage, and this is echoing what we see generally throughout this survey, in that the role of the appointed actuary may be less in these areas, especially where the appointed actuary is external. Product development and capital management planning were typically advised to the appointed actuary earlier, which might suggest a greater involvement by the appointed actuary, which also corresponds with the FCR content results. Just a word of caution when interpreting the membership profile results. A lot of insurers did note that this was not applicable, therefore they seem a bit low. Just over half of appointed actuaries say that they include a net circumstances table in their FCR, or notifiable circumstances table in their FCR. On the advice, on the responses from the appointed actuaries, generally they perceive that they kept well informed. Were answered, the majority of AAs responded in all areas queried was always timely. So maybe not surprisingly, the business plan had the highest usually response and investment had the highest not usually response, but typically these responses were still in the minority of the whole. Some of the comments from the AAs on this respect were generally their opinion is that insurer typically errs on the side of caution with notifiable circumstances, though there were some examples where an adverse notifiable circumstances event was given. This had to do with a high commission charged with no change in premium rate and a high discount offered to some members without consulting the AA. So now we move on to the outstanding claims provision. And this was more to assess what the role of the appointed actuary was in setting the outstanding claims provision of the insurer at the year end of the financial year. 40% of insurers responded that the outstanding claims provision used in the financial year end reporting was set by the AA, and 60% said that it was at least reviewed by the AA. Of the 60% that said that the AA reviewed the provision, 65% then reported that the AA then modified it. Going further on, although not a requirement in private health insurance as it is in general insurance, approximately one-third of appointed actuaries reported that they prepare an insurance liabilities valuation report for at least one of their insurers. All right, so the role of the appointed actuary in FEAC 2 returns. The majority said that the role of the AA is limited, and it's mainly for the outstanding claims provision, whether this be a set or a review process, and also the discretionary margin used in the capital adequacy margin. Most of the remainder said that the appointed actuary had a high level. Unfortunately, we did not flesh this question out enough to describe what a high level is, but it could be assumed that they would also provide some input on what the renewal output amount, renewal option amount should be in terms of forecast going forward. Only one insurer said that the appointed actuary had significant involvement in completing the FEAC 2 return, and not surprisingly, or maybe surprisingly, is that that insurer had an internal appointed actuary. All right. So does the FCR add value? Is it a value add or a regulatory compliance document? And in terms of what the cat might be watching, is it the 730 report or is it the Biggest Loser? So the perceived value of the FCR by insurers. It should be noted here that this was responded by the CFO of the insurer and not the board of the insurer. Therefore, if we actually went to the board, the results may change. Of CSOs, 60% perceive that the FCR is useful or valuable to management and increases the company's awareness of their risk. 80% perceive that the FCR was valuable to the board, which is good because it's a board instrument. And about 50% said that the FCR has been used to influence business decisions in the past. The majority of AAs who responded to this question, 56%, do not believe that insurers view the FCR as just a compliant document. And nearly 90% of appointed actuaries who responded believe the FCR increases the insurer's awareness of the financial risks that they face. So should we continue with the FCR? Over 80% of insurers responded that they would continue with an annual financial condition report. Of the remaining 20%, half said that they would reduce the frequency, so non-annual, and half said that they would discontinue the FCR going forward. It's interesting that approximately 40% of the appointed actuaries did not respond to this question, although that could have been an Excel error, I hope. Of those that did respond, approximately 80% said that they think that the FCR would continue as an annual process, and 20% said that the frequency would reduce. All right. So on to the new professional standard, currently in its second exposure draft. This is meant to be enacted from 1 July 2011, and some comments we received on this from the insurer said that the report should remain to be a tool primarily for management and the board, and that the risk of the current exposure draft is that the key messages to the board will be lost in the overly long and detailed reports. Some of the comments we received from appointed actuaries in the exposure draft was that the increased prescriptiveness of the FCR, as outlined in the professional standard, only serves to increase the view of the FCR as a compliance document. There is currently a creative tension between FIAC and the appointed actuaries that needs to be actively managed. Yeah, that potentially the role of the FCR or the appointed actuary as described by the exposure draft goes beyond the AA role as described in the Private Health Insurance Act. One respondent even said that they were glad that they were no longer appointed actuary because now they have time to concentrate on other things. Okay. All right. So findings from General Insurance. Most of this is from the 2008 survey done by the Working Party. And I think might have been presented at either the 2008 General Insurance Seminar or the 2009 Annual Convention. So just some of the key results from that. 73% of board respondees found that the FCR presentation was at least reasonably useful. 79% of management said that the financial condition report met expectations, even though 71% of them thought it was too long. And about 50% of board members that responded said it was useful in managing a business. As per the results here, investments were the area that was seen to be have the least value added. Improvements suggested from that survey that the report should be shorter and more focused, and that the executive summaries could be punchier and better. That the recommendations were not always commercially viable, and that there should be a section included in the SCR for management's responses to the recommendations or findings of the appointed actuary. Also, there was a statement that the appointed actuary should be courageous in their recommendations, which is familiar, sounds similar to what FIAC has recently, in the past 2 years, have told appointed actuaries, and that they should be fearless in theirs. All right, so just some concluding comments. The appointed actuary role is now quite valued by insurers, then the processes are in place. We should continue to add to our strengths and entrench the role further and provide more of a value add to insurers. We should avoid process. So we should avoid negative assurance. Rather than confirm the result looks reasonable to us, we should confirm why it is. We should start performing plausible sensitivity analysis. Currently, there's a view that we rely on the central estimate for our projections. We should maybe start switching to stochastic or dynamic forward projections. Lastly, we need to balance the needs of all users, including FIAC. Currently, there seems to be the three main stakeholders of the appointed actuary, the board, and the FIAC, and it'll be interesting to see which way we go. All right. Thank you. Just hand it back to Tori.
Thanks, Adam and Rowan. So we've been 5 years down the track, and this is, a good opportunity to have a look at where we're at, what we've done, and get a view of the appointed actuaries and the insurers. Before anyone makes a comment or question, does Fike want to make a comment? Well, use that one if you want.
I'll come here so you can see my face. From my perspective, just for those who don't know me, I'm Hayden Burno. I'm the FIAC actuary. I'm not surprised to see how well valued the FCR document is, and how well read it is by the insurers. We over the preceding months have been involved in giving comments and suggestions and feedback on the exposure draft, as many others in the room would have been. I'll just mention the main improvement that we've been trying to drive through our comments. It's around the communication of the range of possible outcomes in the future, what could happen next, and giving the reader a sense for the breadth of that range. Obviously, it's critical for boards to understand the level of risk involved in their current capital position, their current pricing, their current strategy, and they need to understand the level of risk so that they can compare it to their risk appetite and adjust accordingly. So the actuary is very well placed, I think, and understands very well that has a very good feel for that, for the range of possible outcomes and what could happen. I think one of the presenters earlier referred to it as the edge of plausibility. So, however, when we've talked to boards, there's certainly not the same depth and quality of understanding of that range of outcomes. So it seems to us that there's more work to be done by actuaries in communicating that clearly in a way that's understood. The financial condition report gives a view, essentially, on how safe, how sound is that insurer, And we think in order to do that, there needs to be a clear explanation of the kind of likelihood of things going wrong. So that's been the big thing that FEAC's been driving at in terms of trying to get something around that quantification and communication of the range of possible outcomes into the standard.
Thanks, Hayden. If anyone's got any questions, if I can come forward to the microphone, state your name and ask the question.
Hi, Alex Gould from PwC. Just a quick one to while people are thinking. I guess looking at this from a GI perspective mainly, I found it very interesting thinking about the health implications. I was just wondering where else or who else might benefit from FCRs and could take this feedback on board, thinking of banking, but maybe even wider than that.
Yeah, look, it was because I guess my other practice area is general insurance, so I really looked to all of the general insurance work that had been done. I'd be interested in what the views is on what's happening in life insurance and how the value add of AAs is seen in there. What was interesting to me was just taking some of the key findings that had come from the general insurance area and really seeing that almost exactly the same thing was being said in health insurance. Just making sure that we're listening to everything that's happening in other practice areas.
Sorry, I'll just add that I noticed in the sessions that there's actually one for FCRs and super, so as well one of the discussion topics. I don't know if that's already been there. It was interesting to see that most of the general insurance stuff came out exactly the same. I don't know if that's changed over the past few years. But one of the interesting things I know is that for one insurer, which is quite a large in health insurer, I can get away with probably a 50 to 60 page report for the financial condition report, and it works quite well for their board. But because of the current structure of the professional standards for general insurance for a small general insurer, which doesn't even make the minimum capital requirement of $5 million, I do have to produce a 120-page report to cover off on their FCR requirements. So it's interesting, that contrast that's currently there.
Yeah, David Torrance. I must admit, I found the results from the survey unbelievably encouraging, given that it was the CFOs that answered them, when you would suspect that in a lot of organisations there may be some tension between the CFO and the AA, simply because CFO is part of management and the AA is supposed to give this separate view, if you like. So it would have been great to see the chairman of the board answering the survey, but I can understand the practicalities with that. Probably just addressing a couple of the questions there and maybe just to stimulate some discussion. Is PS600 over-prescriptive? Mine's a resounding yes. But I have a fundamental problem with the way the whole institute's gone with professional standards, and that's just not the way we have in the health. And unfortunately, we've just been caught up in this must for professional standards, which has really been driven out of the Wilkie report back in the UK on actuarial practice over there, and unfortunately seems to have just been translated into Australia. But that's an argument that I'm not going to win, and I accept that. But I think we just need to be really careful in this the professional standard that we're doing, that I think we are just driving ourselves into a bit of a corner. The use of the word must just gives the actuary absolutely nowhere to go. And if you don't do it, then you're up on a disciplinary charge, which I just think is completely wrong. But anyway, mirrored to that, I suppose, is who's the primary audience of the FCR? Well, the legislation tells us who the primary audience of the FCR is, and it's quite clearly the board. I do accept FEAC. They're the ones who are in charge of the legislation. They've given us this role, so clearly they have a duty and a role, and we have a duty, to FEAC. But I think we just need to be careful about, writing this report for FEAC. FEAC has lots of responsibilities and powers under the Act, and FEAC can go and get any information they like from the insurer. They can question the actuary. So clearly they've got a lot of powers and that they can use as well. So I think we need to keep in mind that very strongly of this opinion that the FCR is for the board. And if FEAC want to talk to the board or the actuary about it, they should do that. But I'll leave it there for the moment.
I mean, I guess my only comment is trying to be proactive so that we don't become over-regulated, that it's up to us to try and get the right balance. And it is reassuring that there is such a positive response at the moment from the insurers themselves. And I guess what I didn't add, it's quite a quick thing to just tick a box and fill in the survey, but quite a number of the insurers went to the effort of putting, quite detailed comments about, where the actuaries had been particularly helpful and other things that they would like to see, so that my overall impression was that, insurers are just very positive and really want to see the process working well. So actuaries need to strike the balance with getting the high-level issues that the board needs and making sure that FEAC as well is comfortable that the board is clearly seeing what the risks are, so that we don't get over-regulated.
I mean, David, I agree very strongly that the... as a point actuary, my view is to get information across to the board, and it's a useful document for management. I think if you do that very well, I think you it goes without saying that you will satisfy FIAC as well. If you're professional enough and you give the information that you think needs to be conveyed to the board and management, I think in the main you probably satisfy FIAC as well. I know there's you must do this, must do that, but a big chunk of the FCR is about informing the board and management.
I was interested in Andrew Gale. I'm interested in the remarks you made about notifiable circumstances, and I thought that might be where perhaps things weren't working quite so well, but it seemed that actuaries were getting involved at the planning stage, quite high response. I wondered whether you had any other feedback, were there any other remarks about notifiable circumstances and how that was working or not working, how that can be made to work better, whether any actuaries had nominated specific notifiable circumstances, as is our right under the legislation. And it was interesting to see that about half appointed actuaries referred to the notifiable circumstances in their FCR during the year. So is there anything else about the notifiable circumstances regime that needs to be looked at or could be improved, because it is a fairly unique thing?
From notifiable circumstances is probably just more from working private health insurance, is that the notifiable circumstances themselves are quite broad. So a lot of our insurers had trouble figuring out when to notify us, when not to notify us, and so there's not really a defined materiality or impact level in there. So they had trouble interpreting what notifiable circumstances actually is. So at some points where there's obviously been a miscommunication there. In terms of feedback from the actuaries, appointed actuaries generally said that insurers do err on the side of caution, but there are obviously some circumstances where it hasn't worked. Usually that was about product changes or marketing practices where they haven't feel they've been sufficiently notified in time. Unfortunately, the actual looking at the comments here, most of them generally didn't have an issue with notified consensus or didn't provide any commentary on how they changed the format. Perhaps the 40-odd% that didn't respond would have, but we're not sure.
Bronwyn Hardy, I'm just interested in whether you've got any comments on whether insurers felt that some of the information they get in the FCR is just really tick a box. Yes, I've commented on membership. Yes, I've commented on this. Yes, I've commented on that. Rather than actually opinions or useful information that helps them drive their company. I guess when I've written FCRs, I try and turn it away from just providing the information that I have to provide, which is why I actually agree with David Torrance that I think PS 600 is getting overly prescriptive and it's going to push us towards just providing information that we have to provide rather than also providing the interpretation that's useful. And I was wondering if any of the insurers had provided any information on whether they see some of that coming in the FCR, that they're just getting information because it's information.
Yeah, I think in the investment side it came through in the business plan. It was just they found that there was nothing new actually provided by the appointed actuary. They just basically repeated either what management had told them or what another advisor had said. Some suggest that with investments in particular that they should start bringing in the work of other advisors to the insurer just to flesh that out, that section out. And there was some sort of feedback that the way that they talk about claims experience or membership experience in the FCR was just here's what happened, but there's a set of numbers but no story behind the numbers. So in a sense that we did get some feedback to that nature. And then the other nature we had was that some of the projections that go forward are very useful to the board. The information they actually provide on gross margin or product analysis are also very helpful. So I think in that sense it may depend both on the insurer and the appointed actuary.
Roger, firstly, thanks for doing the survey. And as someone who didn't put in a response, are the results going to be available to miscreants like me?
No. This is, sorry.
There's a vote coming no from the back of the room.
This is what we are going to be, this is what we would be sending back to the insurers in the next day or so.
Okay. Who's the primary audience of the FCR? It can be quite subtle. It can be that as you pull together what should be the main stories in the FCR, what's the agenda in your FCR, your primary audience is the chief executive, and that goes to the range of consultations that you showed in that slide there, that pulling together the agenda is about agreeing with management what's important. And then once you've pulled it together and written the story, come to the conclusions, then clearly the primary audience is the board. And if you play that kind of dualness right, you end up with a process where collectively you and management agree on what the board should be thinking about this company that it's directing. That's my answer to who's the primary audience. And given that's my answer, and you sent the survey to CFOs, I can also understand how much more likely you are to get a response from CFOs, but do you think it's in any we should be treating it as in any way controversial that we had to send it to them instead of to CEOs?
I think we just say CFOs to sort of mean, because it could include managing directors, CEOs. CFO is just the acronym that we use. We ideally probably would have liked to get it to board members or the chairman, but it was hard enough finding contact details for the sort of the CFO managing director as opposed to the board, so we went that way. Also, we thought that some of the more detailed questions the CFO will have more information, for example, outstanding claims provisions in year-end reporting, for example. With regards to the intended audience and I guess the feedback loop which you mentioned with regards to the FCR going to the CFO, coming back and then some shaping being going on before it goes up to the board. We did get some responses from the insurers which suggested that there was actually some consultation process between the appointed actuary and management before a draft was presented towards the board. So there seems to be healthy communication between the appointed actuary and senior management in those examples.
Thanks.
Ben Huey. Just a question on whether there was any feedback on the timing of the FCL, whether the FCL should be further apart from rate submission, or whether management read the report or the board read the report prior to signing the accounts?
Short answer, no. Long answer, the only response we got with regards to the timing of the FCR was that we should have done the survey closer to when it was presented. So unfortunately we don't have anything about whether insurers think that the actual timing of the FCR should be done before or after or with regards to the account setting.
I mean, there was one comment that came back from, I think it was just one insurer that said, look, the whole having to do it at the end of the financial year and reporting by September wasn't necessarily convenient, and could we have a little bit more flexibility around the choice of timing. I think that was just one response along those lines. I guess, you know, it depends what question you ask as to what kind of response. So we didn't really have any leading questions along that way, so it was just the one insurer that came up with that particular observation.
Peter Lurie, thanks a lot. That's I think it's definitely added to our understanding of how insurers actually see the FCR, and they are the primary audience, so I think it's great that we've looked at it from their point of view. I would like to think that appointed actuaries and FIAC also believe that the financial condition report has been a success over the 5 years, and that's not to say it can't be improved. And maybe that's what we're trying to look at with advancing PS600, which I guess it may be something which can be considered as hope prescriptive, but it's not requiring anything other than what's there already for general insurance, for example. That's just by way of sort of introducing a couple of comments I want to make is in relation to parts of the FCR where actuaries are not perceived to add value, and I think this really goes to some of what David and Bronwyn mentioned. It is really the insights that we can bring that are going to be valuable, and we need to work a bit harder maybe on business plans and investment strategy aspects to see how we can use the work that's already been done by the advisors to the health insurer and tease out something that's unique that they're not showing. But to just to paraphrase or parrot back what's already been, the work that's already been done there, I think detracts really from our credibility as appointed actuaries. I guess a question, and it's really wouldn't mind to hear possibly Hayden's view of this, is that if the actuary is going to sketch a range for the future financial soundness of a health insurer in the financial condition report, and that financial condition report gets presented pretty much at the time rate review is going to commence, is that going to have some sort of negative impact on the rate review process? Because I guess what you're saying then is that if you're certifying a particular rate increase as being the appropriate one, there's going to be a similar range around it of likely outcome. So is that going to upset FIAC and the department, for example, Alistair, if you've got a wide range of potentials for the next rate increase when the actuary's having to certify one?
Easy question.
Hayden Burno, that's a difficult question. I guess the rate review process relies upon the judgment it's a decision by the minister, and she seeks input from FIAC, and I would say that. FIAC, being a prudential regulator, obviously has in mind that they don't want any funds to have premiums increases that are too low, and I just think the more quality information that goes into the process, probably actually the better decisions, the better will be the decisions that get made. I've heard it said from some quarters that if the true range of possible outcomes is presented, then it could show that insurers could live with a bit less. But I guess, yeah, you just have to rely upon the efficacy of the process.
Brett Walker. I think it's unfortunate that the government has pulled back the timing of the rate increase proposal. I call it a proposal because that's all it is these days. To the point where when you discuss your financial condition report with the board now, it seems that the only question that they're really interested in is what the rates are going to be. Now, because it's you're going to be presenting your financial condition report sometime in September or even early October, depending on, you know, when you get all the information and when the thing's finished. And the board's going to be making its decisions on its rates usually in late October or very early November. So it's all got compressed. So instead of the board thinking about some of the more important issues about their risk appetite and you know, maybe the capital requirements of the thing and maybe capital management, a whole bunch of things that they should be concentrating on, by the time you're actually talking to them, they're thinking about their rate increase. And I think that's bad, but I don't know how we get round it, because you know, it didn't used to be like that. When we had to put rate increase proposals in on December 24, as it used to be a few years ago, there was enough disconnect between the FCR and the rate increase for you to be able to concentrate on the things that you ought to concentrate on in the financial condition report. Anyway, that's just a comment.
Sorry, David Torrance again. I actually completely disagree with that, Brent. I actually think having the... there are issues around having the rate submission and the FCR at the same time, but I think having a concentration of the rate submission coming up actually brings a whole lot of things like risks and capital management to the fore that we should be talking about. So I think it goes the other way.
Michael Burt, just to confirm that if there was more information in the FCR, that would not affect the AGA's assessment of rate increases in providing advice to FIAC. If there's more information there, we'll use it, but it won't affect the advice, well, it would only affect in a very minor way the advice we give to FIAC, which in turn feeds into the department and minister's decisions. I was just going to make a couple of other comments. The first one is the comment about investments being, as I ought to say, I'm an occasional reader of financial conditions reports, and the comments about the investments being an area of weakness, I'm not surprised by that one bit. I think that's a fairly accurate summation by management of the FCRs, and certainly an area that when I've been reading FCRs, I think tends to be quite weak. The other comment I was going to make is that it's interesting that maybe I look at a biased sample of FCRs, because if they've got to me, that tends to suggest there's something that's a little bit unusual about the institution. So what I might be saying might be a bit biased because of the FCRs I see. But the survey results, I thought, put a slightly rosy picture on the FCRs, and I still regard them as being a work in progress rather than they've got to their eventual destination. And when I've read through FCRs, and when I've been providing advice, I think, I get to that oh dear moment. I thought, I don't remember reading anything in the FCR about this, and then sort of dig out the FCR and sort of burrow through it and eventually find the relevant comment, but that's the problem. I find the relevant comment, but I don't remember it was being there in the first place. So I think there is still an issue about getting the message across to the boards and the CEOs and the CFOs. So I think it's a good start, but I think there's still some way to go, and I think the results might be a little bit on the rosy side.
I'm Huang Nguyen. I'm from the from FEAC as well, and I lead a team that does primarily fund reviews on insurers. And fantastic, and thank you for the survey as well. It's, it really supports the fact that the board appreciates the contents of the FCA and the appointed actuary. Where I came in, and this is a general comment, is that when boards perceive the FCR as a compliance burden, that's when the value proposition decreases quite significantly. We've interviewed a couple of board members, and so this gives you a bit of an insight in terms of how they perceive the FCR, but there are insurers out there, or there are boards out there, that considers the FCR to be a compliance burden, and as a result, that value proposition isn't there. A couple of comments that sort of sticks to my head when we did fund reviews is that one board member commented that FCRs are written by actuaries for actuaries, and as a result they don't actually read the entire report from front to back, and so that is actually a red light for us in terms of what sort of value, what sort of input the AAA has provided to that particular board, and whether that has met the purpose of meeting the board's needs as well.
Again, just following up that comment, I think that actually encapsulates our biggest challenge, and that is clear, succinct communication, because, you know, we really do need to capture the board's attention. We can't have situations where the board members aren't reading the report. We can't have a very lengthy technical report that board members, quite frankly, haven't got time to read. We have to have something that is really going to be hard-hitting and is going to capture their attention. So I think we need to think a little bit more about our audience, of board members, and what is going to resonate with them. You know, I shudder to think the FCR, for some companies, I expect it's going to be by far and away the most lengthy document some boards receive during the year. So we need to be mindful of the time they've got to read the report and get our message out in as succinct a way as we can.
Thanks, Andrew. I think that's a very good summary, actually. I was going to say something very similar. If we don't treat the financial condition report as a report to management and the board and make it as useful as possible, it doesn't really have a future as far as the insurers go. We'll finish up now. Can I just we can just acknowledge the work done by Adam and Raywin?